Quite some time ago, I got the words, when we come together with love, we will win the human race. So when we all come together with love in our hearts, we'll all win. That's what's going to take. Love is going to help heal this.
Welcome to Grow America Outlawed. We are back this week chatting with Joanne Bean, fellow Albertan, chatting about residential schools and a bunch of other problems with the Indigenous situation in Canada these days, as the country sort of comes face to face with its past.
Bits you bet. It was great to have her in studio and actually go through a lot of that. Get some real perspective from the community.
That's right. And we'll go down there and maybe do a sweat one day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun chat with Joanne. We get into a bunch of great stuff that all you guys should know. We got a bunch more shows coming up down the pike on this subject. We've also got some more China stuff coming up. I mean, it's going to be a dark couple of weeks in Outlaw, dark couple of months maybe. But I guess Outlaw, it's kind of a dark show.
It's Outlaw.
When I really look at it, they're all pretty dark. I mean, True Outlaw basically told me, True Outlaw told me I was going to get my head chopped off by Smart Guilty. Hey,
and guess what? That got taken down by Spotify. I mean, you can't say that anymore. So, I mean, this is, you know, this is why we're doing it. I mean, Spotify's taken down two more of our episodes. So, I mean,
There's only 29 episodes. How many episodes? There's 32 episodes on Spotify, and they've taken down three.
Yeah.
That's 10%.
And I mean, the thing is, they don't even get it, right? Most of the people have already listened to those. They're just making it worse for themselves, really.
Yeah, they're making themselves.
They think they're doing a good job just to deleting all this stuff that's maybe hateful, or I don't know what their excuse is for those. But I mean, it's already been listened to, but 95% of the people are going to listen to it. So good job, Spotify.
Yes, and it's also
so available. I mean, what are they gonna hit this? Like, what are we not allowed to talk about now? The Indian residential schools, China organ harvesting.
Well, this is gonna be an
Is it just COVID only? Is it vitamin D? Like, come on, guys.
Because so far it's been COVID only. Now it's gonna be interesting to see what YouTube and these things start doing about residential schools in China.
I know those are two pretty heavy topics.
Yeah.
And we got ones coming up on demons, but I guess
is a good way for us to try and figure out who our owners are.
Yeah.
Or at least what they think about.
Exactly.
Or don't want us thinking about.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic, chat.
Well, I'll go through. Joanne's been, I mean, she talked about her bio a little bit there, but she's been a registered massage therapist since 91. She's got 15 years experience as a senior therapist and trainer in one of Canada's most prestigious spas. She's been doing all these kinds of healing modalities since the mid-90s, like polarity, Tibetan energy massage, Reiki, Shiatsu, cranial sacral, somato, emotional release, post-traumatic stress syndrome, myofascial therapy, traditional native healing, including the sweat lodges and that kind of thing. And recently doing that work, which actually our friend Rye went down to see her do that quantum soul retrieval work. So she offers her clients both physical and spiritual to help them co-create a holistic approach to their unique life challenges. And she's down there a couple hours south of Calgary. Not that she's really like, I don't even know if she wants us to advertise her modality. I mean, it's, you know, she doesn't, it's not like we did it to plug her stuff. I mean, she's been a friend now for probably 10 years of mine at least, and 9 or 10 years. So it was good to just have a real honest and open chat about everything that's going on in studio.
In studio. Did I go out that day and I shot an antelope?
Yeah, I think so.
And
yeah.
Picked a bunch of sage. It's still hanging in my garage drying.
There you go. Right on.
Just doing Indian things. Yeah, it's a fantastic chat. Joanne's a fantastic cat. And we hope you guys enjoy the chat with Joanne Bean.
All right, Joanne Bean, welcome to Grow America Outlawed. Thanks for joining us. Great to see you again.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Graham. Thank you, Darren.
Thanks for coming on the show.
It ends up being on July 1st, which is our Canada Day. It's a different Canada Day this year, a little bit different because there's more focus on what's happened in the residential schools. So it's good timing that you're here. You come from down south where you've got a healing lodge down there and a sweat lodge. And
good so to, it's down south and back east?
Yeah.
What's an up north?
I'm up guessing. North. Yeah, exactly.
And out west.
Yeah, out west. Exactly. You got it. Finally, you figured it out.
All right. Perfect.
So So I came from back east in Montreal.
Yeah, so did I.
Now I'm down south.
Yeah.
And I have been out west too.
There you go. So yeah, get right up on the mic when you talk. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to getting your guys' perspective on what's been happening with the residential schools, and it's now in the media. So I don't know what you want to start off with that, Joanne, and maybe we were just talking about how you're celebrating today a little bit different than normal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've already, like, I started my day with a couple of greetings on texting and Messenger from friends saying Happy Canada Day. And I'm like, yeah, same to you. And I sent back an orange heart and left it at that. And then a friend from far away sent me a message and, you know, Happy Canada Day. And I said, I'm not really celebrating Canada Day out of respect for the children that have been found at the residential schools. And yeah, so in honor of that, I'm kind of keeping it low key, and this is what I'm doing today. Is I'm here on the show to talk about all this and get into how we can promote some healing around that. Where do we go from here? Like, what's the next step?
Yeah, it's tough. We had a guy on talking about this. I thought it was a couple of years ago, and it was actually just last year. It was during COVID, which shocked me. I felt like it was a long time ago, and we were talking about the problem with the residential schools and I still couldn't really wrap my head around it. It's hard for people to understand what really happened. I think it takes a while to wake up to really like how bad it was. What's your perception of that?
Well, my understanding is that the residential schools were operated from about 1870 through 1997 was the last one that closed. And the whole point of it was to remove the Indian from the child, like, you know, make them assimilate into colonization, into Western culture, or what has become Western culture, I guess. But that was done through a lot of, they were exposed and experienced a lot of repetitive trauma in every which way that you can imagine. And it's unimaginable for most of us. Like, I've heard stories from elders that have attended Sweat Lodge with me firsthand as to some of the things that they experienced. Some of it gets a little graphic. And, you know, I've worked with a woman, a female elder, who was repeatedly raped and now has multiple personality disorder as a coping mechanism for her to survive and make it through that. And, come, you know, she would come to the lodge for help for her and her family. I don't know if you want to hear a few more of the details of that.
Yeah, maybe, because this is the problem is people don't understand that it wasn't just a school for people to go away and learn. Like there was a lot of problems, a lot of like,
no.
You could say it's very dark and very evil. And people don't understand how bad it really was. That's what I think that's why. It's
part
important.
Of the problem is that near the end, it wasn't quite as bad. So you get like people can go to these other stories from the people that were going in, you know, the 70s and the 80s when it had really backed off. And I think by 81, the schools were all actually Indian run. So anything from 81 to 96, you know, didn't have any of that context. So that's where naysayers can go to the story and say, well, you know, we talked to this guy and he said it wasn't so bad. Well, it's like, well, you know, most of them were pretty bad. And a lot of it is the pre 19, I would say 68 or so, 69 is from like that 1876 to the mid 60s is when, I mean, it's all terrible, but that's when the real atrocities and the genocide and the real bad shit. By the time the late 60s roll around, the public was starting to pay attention. It was getting harder to get away with that kind of stuff, which is when it just took a different avenue, which I'm sure we'll get into later. Is it's never gone away. It's just mutated into different forms.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is some people say it's still happening? You know that they, whether it's the women up north that are go missing and the trafficking they think is still happening. And
yeah, it's all related.
Yeah.
And it's residual from this experience. I mean, they went there and everything about them was made to be wrong. Their hair was wrong. It was cut off. They were doused with, scrubbed with lye and sprayed with lice, like a parasitic, antiparasitic or whatever, pesticide to treat them for lice. They were scrubbed with lye, like to bleach their skin and to like just, they were considered really dirty. And, you know, so they, everything about them, their food was made to be wrong. Their clothing was wrong. It was all removed and taken away. Their language was wrong. I've heard stories of having pins stuck in their tongue for speaking their language.
Yeah.
I had, you know, so everything was about them was made to be wrong. But that, not only that, but it was repeatedly traumatized, like beating, torture, rape, starvation.
Well, murder, too.
And murder. It was like, oopsie, we went a little too far with that one. Oh, well, we'll, you know, we'll stick them in the furnace. You know, like the good thing we have big boilers, right? Or we got a massive property outside. We'll just, you know, go dig a grave, right? And a lot of them then succumbed to illness, too. There was that component as well, because they didn't have the immunity to tuberculosis and measles and mumps and all those things that they were now exposed to because of the company they were keeping with the nuns and priests, and the fact that all of this was done to them in the name of God, you know, by nuns and priests. That, like,
backed by the government.
And it was all backed by the government. It was on, you know, it was on the government authority that this was done. And it was, they first tried to do, have the schools on the reserves. But they found that there wasn't enough, because the kids were still involved in their own culture. And they, okay, if this is going to work, we need to pull them right out of their culture and cut them off from anything to do with their culture. And so they had this repeated trauma and flogging, you know, just beaten out of them, that this, everything about them was inappropriate. So when they came out of there, they were so fragmented spiritually, because of that repeated trauma, and saying, you know, this is wrong. Your hair, you know, everything about you is wrong, and that's imposed and reinforced with trauma. So they came out of there very fragmented and full of self-loathing, full of like very empty spirit. And because in shamanism, they talk about, we do soul retrieval. And in shamanism, you talk about doing, if you go to an Andean shaman, from South America, they'll do a soul retrieval.
Yeah.
And they'll send their own spirit, they'll drum, and they'll send their spirit off on a journey, and they will, on your behalf, and they'll find and locate a soul fragment of yours, like from where you experienced a trauma at early childhood. And they'll take that soul piece and bring it back to you, and then do a little ceremony to reintegrate it into you and infuse it back into you.
Wow.
And yeah.
Do they do that with their ayahuasca and all that? Or is that also just done through shamanic
I haven't experienced that with the, I'm not sure about that, with the ayahuasca part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's been people that have sort of been kind of researching in that area. That's not something I have experience with.
So does it go back to your other generations as well? Is that generational trauma that they do with that soul retrieval, or is it just that, like?
Well, it's done the way that the true shaman would do it. It's done, like, you know, kind of one soul part at a time. So if you had a trauma when you were 4 years old, they would bring that soul part back, or 2 years old, or in, you know, we've had big shocks, big scares, big frights, you know, things that happen that where we felt totally, you know, incapable of, we weren't strong enough, we weren't good enough, we weren't big enough, we weren't smart enough to figure it out at that time. We were too small, we weren't enough of something. We've all had those experiences. And some people, unfortunately, have had really quite violent incidences and experiences and repeated traumas and, you know, rape and incest and all kinds of things. So if you were raised in that way and then you come out of there and you go to have a family. How are you supposed to know? Both of you, both people had residential school trauma and were raised with brutality. How are they supposed to know how to be parents and loving and nourishing, you know, nurturing a family or each other, you know, and they're dealing, most of them have an empty soul. So one of the ways with addiction that people try to fill that empty void is with alcohol or drugs. It's an escape because what they're really trying to do is find those missing pieces of themselves to make them feel whole again. So there is actually, there's a method of healing that was gifted to me. It was I received it as a download. I was researching locations to do meditations and things in to run a retreat, teaming up with a geologist in Drumheller. And he did all the educational part of the geology of the land and what you're looking at when you see the layers on the land. And I did I found some certain locations to do meditations and healing circles and hands-on healing. And we took a break at the Wayne Hotel, stopped in, had a coffee, sat down, boom, I got this download. It was like, it came to me, and the words that came to me was like, here's how you heal an Indian. And I'm like, what? Like, okay. That doesn't sound appropriate, but what do you got? You know, and I just, it wasn't words. It was just a knowing. And it was like, okay, how the shaman would do one soul part at a time. Well, we're in a time now where we're working multidimensionally. We're working 3D, 4D, 5D, and some beyond. So, and people are experiencing past life stuff. Some people who astral travel and journey can go future life, and we're dealing with a lot of stuff in the present life. So why not do it more quantumly, where you can round up all those soul parts, pieces, fragments, splinters, shards that have been removed or lost due to trauma, injury, insult, illness, violence, or given away freely as effort to help someone else, in whichever way the soul parts were lost, but call them home. Why can't you just do that? So this is how it came to me, was that this is how you do it. And I was shown this method to do it all in one shot, bang. And so I practiced with a few of my friends who are also in healing work and energy work and psychology, and worked on a cross-section of them. And I thought, well, okay, because this came to me in an indigenous way, I believe it needs to be done at least four times, because, you know, just like, you know, you may listen to a workshop and you hear parts of it that resonate with you, and you retain those right off the hop. And if you read your notes over again a week later, you're like, oh yeah,
you're totally, like, you didn't even read it.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, that part too. You know, and then, you know, if you read it a year later, you know, even more stuff will stick. Right. So, that's what I thought, you know. That's sort of how it came to be. So I've been practicing. I've actually got some friends coming down on Saturday to receive the training.
Wow,
I shared it
with
our friend Durek in New Zealand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his brother, Daryl. And so they could practice on each other. And just really crazy, profound things happened when, as we were doing that, like, you know, a flock of gallas, these beautiful parrots came by. And when Durek was working on Durek, I heard a bull roar. It's an instrument of communication that's used by the Aboriginal shaman and medicine men in like Australia and New Zealand. It's like I believe it's a piece of wood. It's like a diamond shaped piece of wood with a cord on it. And you spin it around and it makes this whirring, buzzing sound. And they would, you know, increase the intensity of it, like, or speed, to convey frequencies, and it would travel through the wind and convey messages across space, right, and area. And I heard that right outside the door, and I was like, who's out there? And just when I, Durek was working on me, and I thought, like, at one point, it'd be so great to have the drum. And all of a sudden, his brother Daryl started drumming. And afterwards, talking about it, Dirk said that there was actually, he was trying to get energy to move through a certain area of my body, and it was kind of stuck. And then he was like, geez, it would be grateful to be great to have like something to, I need some kind of percussion or something to get this moving, to, you know, change, to break up the frequency and get it going. And just because we were all connected spiritually, without a cue, Daryl went and started drumming and it was totally appropriate for the moment. So, you know,
so tell us a little bit more about this healing, then the modality that like you're training.
I call it, quantum soul recall. It's like a soul recall because it's recalling your soul parts back to you. And so I do it, you can integrate it into like a Reiki treatment. I do it as part of sometimes like on its own or with, as part of a massage, like I can incorporate it into when I'm working, doing other type of therapy with clients. Cause I've been a massage therapist for 30 years. I've been doing Reiki and craniosacral since the early 90s. I'm a Reiki master teacher and then started doing or getting involved with indigenous healing after my first sweat lodge in 2008. I searched my whole life because like my mom was born in 1926. So, and I found out that my grandmother, who was considered Métis, Cree background, my great-grandmother, we found it in the Métis records where my great-grandmother gave up her status. It doesn't say why or whatever, but it just says on this day, Charlotte Janil gave up her status, her native status, or Indian status. And then I found out through a client that my grandmother, who's a Linklater, Charlotte Linklater, she was connected to, her lineage is totally full of healers.
Wow.
So I found out through a client who was a chief, this is several, about 10, 15 years ago, but he was a chief in a reserve around just east of Saskatoon. And that's the area. My grandmother was from Pelly, Saskatchewan, near the Manitoba border. So it's in that neighborhood. And but I had asked my mom for years, I pestered her to ask about my background, my heritage. I wanted to know about my, Cree background. And she said, well, she was just really tight-lipped about it. And she said, you know, in the 40s, 30s and 40s, it was not fashionable to be mixed blood. Like if anybody found out you were a half-breed, then you were literally tarred and feathered and run out of town. That's what she told me, that you would be completely ostracized from the community. So her mother, my grandmother, just basically kept her nose to the grindstone, kept very quiet, worked hard, didn't make waves in the community, like just worked really hard and kept quiet, you know, and they just played white because this was going on. If you were demonstrating any of your traditional culture, language, anything to do with the traditional culture, your kids were taken away and put in residential school for basically debriefing, like reprogramming into a more colonial format or whatever you want to, like, you know. So, yeah, so they kept quiet. My grandfather was French Canadian. So, they just kind of hung out and he worked and she stayed home and washed clothes and took care of the house and the critters and a big family. And, then they all went off to war.
I got a couple questions, Darren.
Well, back then, I guess just marrying a Frenchman would have been enough to relinquish your Indian status for a woman, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but if you were male and you married a non-Indigenous woman, you got to keep your status, and she got status.
Yeah.
So it was completely...
And you could sell it. But then if you wanted to be a lawyer or a doctor, you had to give it up right away. If you wanted to vote, you had to give it up right away. So yeah, it's I know some Linklaters.
See, they're everywhere. My elders said, yeah, there's Linklaters everywhere, even in jail. He the elder I worked with was the spiritual counselor in Bowdoin for a few years. And then he worked with the guys when they were in halfway houses and on parole after they came out of jail. And that's the guys I started doing Sweat Lodge with. In 2008, in April, I was invited to the Banff Center. Well, I heard about an event at the Banff Center. It was an elder from Morley that came out to speak to whoever was interested about Native spirituality. And I said, oh, wow, could I go? Could I attend? And my friend said, yeah, sure, just come with me. So off I went. And at one point, the elder, he shared a few simple teachings and a few medicines. And then at one point, he walked around behind us. There was eight of us sitting in a semicircle, and he was sitting against the wall with his back against the wall. And at one point, he got up and walked around behind us and sang and drummed. And as he was standing behind me, drumming and singing, I opened my eyes, and the room was dimly lit. And on the wall was shadows of people who were not in the room, head and shoulders in varying shades of light, silver, smoky, gray, kind of darker, lighter, and bright white. There was all these people, and I look away, close my eyes, look again. Yeah, I'm still seeing it for sure. I'm really seeing this. And so at the end, we did a sharing circle, and I told him what I saw, and he didn't really remark about anything at that time. But when we walked out to the vehicles after to the parking lot, he said, you know, that's really interesting that you saw that, because you were the only one out of eight people who did. You need to come to a sweat lodge. And that was in April. I wasn't actually able to get to one until August 28th, 2008. And if you run the numerology on that, it's 82828. It's like 11111. It's like big, huge portal of change your life, you know, no going back. So it was a very profound experience. There were five pipe holders present. And just, you know that everybody has their different skills and gifts. You know, some people are clairvoyant, some people are clairaudient. They see spirit, hear spirit. They're empathic. They feel what you feel. They're clairsentient, you know, where they feel what's going on with you physically. If you have pain somewhere or sickness, you know, they'll feel that. So there's five of them all working with their guides and helpers and their own gifts. There was 14 of us in the lodge, and all these elders were working with their teams of spirits to help us to let go of our crap and to release what we didn't, you know, what doesn't serve us, that kind of stuff, and to be open to receive that love and the healing we need to better ourselves. And it was crazy profound. I barely remember the drive home. I got home safely, but there was parts like spirit was totally guiding me home because I was out of it. And for about 2 or 3 weeks, I was calm, relaxed, nothing ruffled my feathers, nothing bothered me, nothing triggered me. My colleagues at the Banff Springs, I was supervising at the Banff Springs Spa, and my colleagues were asking me, like, are you on some new medication or something? Because you're really calm. Like, nothing is frazzling you. Like, this, wow. And I'm like, I don't know, sweat, you know, I guess. And that really, really changed everything for me. And that's, see, moving forward with this, I think those traditional types of healing, like I do healing circles where it's a smudge, and I'm going to smudge in a moment here and just before we go any further, but we start with a smudge and then we go around the circle and pray, ask spirit for the help that we need, for ourselves, for loved ones, near, far, it doesn't matter, for collectives, for politicians, like whoever, you know, or the Mother Earth, like wherever the prayers are needed, you know, like, you know, right now there's a tremendous amount of, like, today is a day of honoring these little spirits that have chosen this time and, you know, in history to make themselves, you know, be revealed. And, you know, this is one of the things that was listed in the 94 calls to action. You know, I scanned through them looking to see how deep we can get into that conversation. I'm like, wow, there's a lot to read here. You know, the report was like 116 pages long. And then there's all these links to other, you know, other things. And so I kind of just scanned through it and got the highlights. But it's all about that, right? It's, you know, it's honoring these little children who are, even though they gave their lives up, some of them 120 years ago, they've been waiting 120 years for restitution, you know, for the opportunity to be acknowledged, to be validated, for their existence to be validated, and what they died for, you know, to come, to for the truth to be revealed. And that's why I pray for that every day, you know, that the truth be revealed with whatever's going on in our lives right now. You know, we really, you know, through my healing journey, I've always prayed for that. The first time I started smudging, it was like, I want to see the truth. I want to see the truth and not to be misled by treachery. I'd rather see the truth or hear the truth, and even if it's not what I want to hear or see. You know, I don't want to be, don't condescend me and pat me on the back and tell me what I want to hear, and really, you know, it's something else is going on. You know, sometimes it's not pretty. Like a lot of the lessons that we learn, some are brutal, some are mean, and some are kind, and some are funny, and some are friendly, you know, and, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes and in different ways. But today is about honoring those little lives that were lost for whatever reason, and to pay them respect, to acknowledge their existence, to validate their reason for being. And if their reason for being is to wake the population up at this time, to wake people up to what the government and the churches are capable of, to get to reach their agenda, you know. Yeah, and it's not pretty. It's pretty evil. It's pretty ugly, the stuff that was going on.
Darren, do you want to pipe in? Or I mean, I've got so much to unpack here.
You ask your questions.
Well, I mean, it is divine. I guess the timing could be seen as divine, and it is a time when people need to see that they should be careful trusting the church and the government. I mean, this is a very, very interesting time, and I haven't really figured that out myself, especially with, you know, the pressure to comply to certain measures and all this kind of stuff that's happening right now, Indigenous included. I mean, there's a lot of that happening. So, you know, because my mind ends up saying, well, why now? Why are they bringing all this out now? Why is the media paying attention now? Why is the government making some sort of acknowledgement now? Because there's people that have said, you know, this is a bit of a whitewash. They're only admitting certain things. They're not admitting the real nasty stuff. They're not honoring the murderous aspect of this. They're just saying, hey, there was, you know, a few thousand kids that died of diseases or, you know, by mistake, that kind of thing. So I don't really know where I'm going with this, except that it's, it is interesting timing, and it's good to hear that maybe there's some spiritual reason for that.
Yes. But somebody asked me a question the other day. I did a talk, on Tuesday night for a group. And one of the questions that came up was what's not being said in the news is how did this, the 215 that were found in Kamloops that kind of started this ball rolling, how did that come to be? And where did that story come from? Who initiated that search? And, you know, how did that come about? And I was always taught to question. I mean, I've always questioned. I got myself in trouble in Sunday school, you know, for questioning things. And instead of answering my questions, which were valid questions, I was just told, that's not appropriate to ask that kind of, we don't ask those kind of questions. You just do as you're told. And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, you know, it didn't make sense to me. I was less than 10 years old and things didn't make sense to me, and I was questioning. And instead of just answering me, I was just getting this, you know, don't challenge us, you know, don't challenge us. And I even got that in the sweat lodge when I asked the question of the elder, one of the first lodges that I went to in Morley. And I was like, well, how come I have to wear a dress, but that woman is allowed to wear shorts and sit cross-legged to boot, and which is not traditional for women. Women are meant to sit side saddle, like, you know, like a horse, like your legs to the side, not cross-legged. It's considered quite vulgar in the sweat lodge. And how come that lady is allowed? And I'm, and he goes, don't challenge me. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. Like, it's the same kind of crap. Like, I'm sorry, but just answer my question. It's a valid question. It's not a, and later on he did, but, and there were personal reasons why, because he said she had a sore back. It hurt her to sit side saddle. I go, well, it hurts me too. I'm not used to sitting like this. I could totally, this is like pulling, stretching my whole sciatic nerve, you know, in a way that I'm not used to. And he goes, oh, like, don't challenge me. And I'm like, okay, I see where this is going, right?
So were you questioning? So what was your point then on how it came about now? Is that, I felt like you were going to say that it doesn't matter how it came about now.
Well, I mean, it would be interesting to know how it came about now, because that question right now, I don't know. I haven't found it anywhere in any of the articles that I came across about that first 215. And now the numbers change. It's already over 1,300. And, you know, every day it's changing again as they unveil another school. And now with forensic technology and equipment, I guess they have sensors that they can, or scans that they can see right into the ground and find the remains, right?
So I think some of that money is just trickling out. Like, my understanding was they've been waiting to get in there for like, since like for over a year and a half. But then COVID came and they couldn't get in for that. And
okay.
It seems, from what I've looked into, it seems to just be, you know, that's how fucking long government takes. I mean, that the yeah. TRC doesn't come out until late 2015 or mid 2015. So by the time they had just finally started to get, I mean, because the government still kept saying no to the money, no to the money, no to the money, no to the money. I mean, the best part about that, the one in Kamloops, is going to be that, you know, everyone's opening up their wallet all of a sudden. I think Alberta dished out $8 million, BC dished out a bunch. Now I can't remember what the federal government did, but I mean, the Trudeau's cabinet and most of the Liberal Party of Canada just abstained from voting against continuing to fight residential school survivors in court like 3 weeks ago. So Trudeau, you know, he likes to talk about how inclusive he is and how he's going to reconcile. And his dad was, you know, a piece of shit too. But, you know, they just voted. It was like every single member of parliament, except for a bunch of liberals, just said, no, we're not going to vote on that. And Canada was the only, it's funny you mentioned Australia and New Zealand earlier, because those are, you know, you got Australia, New Zealand, the US and Canada that sort of have the most oppression of indigenous cultures mm-hmm. and their colonialism, which is, you know, funny enough, all from the same place at the end of the day. But those are the four countries that voted against the UN resolution in 2007 for indigenous rights and all that stuff. And that's when there's like 140 some countries that vote yes, and you've got four that vote no, and they just happen to be the four countries that are dealing with indigenous people. I think Canada later got pressured into signing that, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure. I'm a healer. I spend my time healing, working with people, doing exorcisms, vanquishing demons, you know, like clearing houses, shifting energies into more positive. I haven't truly spent a lot of time, but I have heard some of the stories firsthand from residential school survivors.
See, my concern is there's some people fighting back. I know there's some bans and people that have been researching this for a while that don't want the government to have their hands or the committees that they fund to have their hands on these graves and stuff, right? Because they're gonna, who knows what they can do for it, right? I mean, they've had evidence of documentation. The government's been taking down documentation. The church has been getting rid of documentation. Covering
RCMP's complicit.
RCMP. So Is there any feeling about that in the Indigenous community that the, just to who to trust with this information now? I mean, if they go in and say, oh, you know, we found this or that, you just don't know. Like, there should be an impartial third party doing these investigations. Like, it's like asking the government to investigate themselves, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, or like when an engineer clears his own plans without having somebody, and then a wall caves in, you know, oops. Yeah, for sure. I agree. It should be a third party, like impartial, indifferent. You know, when I read through the report, I read through the calls to action. And I mean, there was, you know, 94 calls to action. So I'm like, okay, I really, to kind of wrap my brain around this properly, I got to kind of take a peek at this and glance through. And there was a lot to read, but I'm like, it basically came down to validation and that to give the, allow the Indigenous people the right to monitor themselves, to partake of their own healing, to be a partner and to be involved in these decisions. Again, not just complying with a colonial list of things they got to, and all this verbiage that's, you know, it just makes your head spin trying to like read through all this stuff. And half of it, I found, wow, this is like, it simply comes down to validation and allowing them to use their own, not to sit with psychologists and talk about this stuff forever, but to actually get some proper healing that allow them to use their own methods, their own traditional methods of healing to support the healing of this, the healing process.
There should be some level of self-governance brought in as well. I mean, at this point right now, it's the federal government who decides who's an Indian. So, I mean, I've got to fight the federal government if I want to decide if my girls are part of my band. Whereas it should be my band's decision who's part of the band, and the federal government shouldn't be a part of that. So I think the other big one is self-governance and land. I mean, land's the big elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about, but the Indians don't have any land. We still any land.
That's not the perception, for sure. We've got some land that's
lent to us from the federal government. So I can go live on the reserve and maybe get some housing and stuff like that, but I can never fucking own it. Never, ever. The federal government, the queen, whoever the fuck is lending it to me at her discretion until I'm assimilated into her culture. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm already assimilated for the most part, so that's a mute point, but the point remains that the Indians don't have any land. That's like, there's no land for the Indigenous people in Canada right now. It's all on loan.
So would there be a difference, like, if they owned it?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'd have to see. Yeah, there should be, but it's not as simple as just giving them the land that they have now, because you're talking about displacement a bunch of times and land zones that have been treated down and then taken down again and then whittled down again. So it's a big, long, hard discussion to figure out how that would look. I don't know how that's going to look. It's not as simple as just chopping the board up again, but I mean, we do know that closing in on 90% of the land in Canada is owned by the government. So there's plenty of fucking wiggle room. I mean, if the private citizens own like 4%, less than 4% of the land in Canada. The rest is, there's another like 7% of corporations and oil companies and blah, blah, blah. And then there's 88% is split up between the federal government, which is the crown, and the provincial governments, which is probably still the fucking crown somehow.
Well, I live in southern Alberta, and we are surrounded. There's a lot of Hutterite colonies around. And I thought, you know, if the Indigenous people followed that, a little bit of that example, like learned from that example of what the Hutterites do, is they, all the monies go to the colony. Nobody has individual wealth, really. And they keep buying more land, more equipment. They expand their operation. They buy up more land, and they set up another pig barn. They set up another chicken barn. Like, they, you know, they expand and they farm and they buy more equipment. And when the colony gets too big, They get so excessive of 70 to 80 people, a couple of family groups will branch off and go start another colony. But they keep buying up more land. They bought up half the farmland in the southern Alberta, you know, around in my area. Like at the end of my block is owned by Hutterite Land. And I thought, you know, if instead of shrinking their land and being under attack always, like it's like they're under psychic attack, like to have their lands removed, like, oh, we want to put a pipeline and it's got to be right through here. Well, if you look on the map, it's like the reserve is like so big and, you know, there's all this crown land around. And
It says right in the Indian Act that they can put bridges, roads, pipelines, whatever they need to do through at any time because it's not the Indians' land. They don't own one shred of it, not one.
So the other problem was from
1867 until 1951, Indians weren't even allowed to sell their goods off the reserve. We're even allowed to leave the reserve without a pass. But you're also not allowed to sell your goods to settlers. So now you can, they were kind of held back from that Hutterite model already. So the only way they can get into that now is they've got to leave the reserve and start, you know, which I mean, is maybe what the term we've got to take at this point. But I think the concern would be that if we leave the fucking, we don't own that land. So if we leave it, what's good? Because it's already like, I don't know. I'd have to look at the.
It's like you're giving it away.
Yeah, you'd have to look at the newest amendments. But back in like the 60s and the 50s and the 40s, just like if your land wasn't cultivated, that was reason enough to give it to a settler. That was good enough. Oh, they're not using it. We'll take it. Not take into account that maybe they just want to let their.
Buffalo roam,
or their antelope roam, or
keep it grow as their sage.
You're not cultivating, then we take it. Right. That's so. I mean, you couldn't even have started that process up until 60 years ago.
Well,
that's why I think some people think that the 94 things and this whole reconciliation thing is a whitewash a bit, right? Like, it's one thing to acknowledge what's happened. And that, what was the word you used again? You used the word there.
Validation.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's good. But if they're not addressing the land issue and it just feels like they just want bit more government and bigger government and more from the government when it should be like, let's get away from the government or have or not have to rely on them or something. Like, I feel like there's something, it's just asking for more of what is already, which there should be very little trust left with this whole thing. And yet we want more from them in a way instead of, no, we want things to be the way they should be, which I don't really know. I don't know what that even is. I can't even wrap my head around really this whole thing yet, but, and then the fact that they're not acknowledging the genocide in there. I mean, like there's some people pushing back and saying, hey, this is crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
There's no acknowledgement of that. Let's get into why this isn't happening, why the international community isn't holding Canada accountable for the genocide.
Yeah, that was a meme I saw just before coming here today. Quick peek on social media was a Canadian flag upside down. The maple leaf was orange and it was no pride in genocide. And that, you know, that speaks volumes. I was starting to read through like some of the things, the information about the residential schools, and you know, I was just in tears, like, you know, and then reminded of the things, the stories that I've heard. You know, there was one elder who said he and his sister were put in there, and they were segregated. So the girls were in one dorm, and the boys were in another dorm. And his mom had begged him, please keep an eye on your sister. Look out for your sister. So he promised his mom, like when they were being taken away, that he would look after his little sister. So he snuck into the girl's dorm to check on her just to see how she's doing. And he got caught and he was made to wear a dress, you know, parade around in a dress. You want to hang with the girls? You can be a girl then. And, you know, he was made to, you know, to go to school and go to his classes wearing a dress. He got sick from the food that they were serving. Whenever he was sick, he was made to lick up his own vomit off the floor.
Jeez.
This is the kind of, you know, things. And if they disagreed or they refused to eat the food, then it's fine. You don't want to eat? Stick them in an isolation room for 4 days, 5 days, a week. If they live, well, maybe we'll give them some bread and water.
So can you talk a little bit more about your quantum soul retrieval type healing? Because I got the sense that it was more about an individual, more about less of an individual healing, but more about an overall cultural healing, or I don't even know how to describe it, but I felt like you were talking about retrieving a lot of pieces of a lot of souls.
Yeah, because like I said, I practiced when this information first came to me. I practiced with a few friends of mine who I knew were in the energy field and even psychology and healing arts. And I sat with them afterwards and got their feedback. And I just asked them, okay, what did you experience through this? And one of them said, you know, she had so many images flash past her so fast, she couldn't really even describe any one of them particularly. And then all of a sudden she went somewhere completely white, glaring white. And then the images started like coming again, like so fast. And another one said, she felt so full of her own spirit, like full of her own self, that she didn't have to do her usual, prayers of protection, to go to bed. Usually she spends quite a bit of time doing prayers of protection for herself and her family. And she goes, I feel like there was no room for anything to get in other than me, because I was full of myself. All my, you know, like I was full of my own spirit was complete. And so I had some really interesting feedback. And then, you know, when I shared it with my friends in New Zealand, they continued on doing this. I said, you have to do this on each other 4 times each. And like Dirk was watching his brother kind of blossom into all of a sudden dropping whatever was holding him back from pursuing his gifts and his natural talents and his real true passion.
Wow.
And blossom into, you know, the healer and, you know, using his gifts like how he was meant to be.
Fantastic.
I've done it at Sundance. I was a Sundancer for 8 years in Manitoba. And that is considered one of the most powerful healing ceremonies in the Native traditions. It's a process of 4 days of fasting, abstaining from food and water, dancing for probably 12 hours of the day on and off in rounds. A round is, depending on the type of the tribe, the Cree and Ojibwe, a round is 4 songs. 16 songs, like 4 songs for each direction. I've danced with the Lakota Sundance for 2 years, and their rounds were only 4 songs. So, but then they don't allow you to have a drop of water for that 4 days. And you do Sweat Lodge morning and evening. So it's intense. And what I discovered was everybody goes to the tree. We all take our turns going to the tree. So the first day after this information came to me, the first day I went through my prayer, and for each person going to the tree, I asked that their soul parts, pieces, fragments, splinter shards that were lost through trauma, violence, or in, you know, through time, space, or dimension, past life, present life, future lives, be downloaded through that tree. And when they contacted the tree, they'd get their download. And what the elders do is the healers will go and they'll clear the person with the eagle fan and the rattle and their eagle bone whistle, and they'll pull whatever negative stuff is stuck within you, pain, sickness, whatever, emotional cysts and things like that. And they often will cough or spit out. Some of them throw up, like, and they were going... it was pretty intense. I mean, that happens normally, naturally. But to me, it seemed like it was a little bit, like people were really clearing, because you want to clear the vessel to receive before you receive, you know, and these parts have fragmented off because of trauma, because of fears, because of intense emotional shock. So you want to clean the vessel first and get rid of the fear, get rid of the anger, get rid of You want to extract that stuff first. And then there's make space for those parts to reintegrate. And so I've broken it down. I do it as I do a chakra balance. So with each chakra, and I think you do Reiki, or you've had Reiki done, so you're familiar with you're familiar with a chakra balance. And so with each chakra, I'll integrate, I'll call back, I'll recall certain portions of that person's spirit, anything, and I'll go through the sequence for each system of the body. So for the integumentary system, for the skeletal system, for the muscular system, for the digestive system, for the lymphatic system, the endocrine system, the nervous system, cardiovascular system, circulatory system, endocrine, lymphatic, reproductive systems, like all the systems of the body, anything, wherever there's been insult or injury, trauma, or because these people were made, like your hair was wrong. So anywhere where in history where your hair has been made to be wrong and you were beaten and traumatized and it was, you know, you lost the soul part because of that, then we recall that piece. And then I integrate it into them. I have a special way that was shown to me to integrate that piece and cinch it in. And I've done this with people at the pyramid as part of a retreat. And part of, you know, they came, we do individual healing. So they were on the table for like 15 minutes and I did this as part, did a bit of clearing and then did this download for them. And the person got up and I tell them, go out and walk the labyrinth, you know, go down and spend some time by the trees down by the lake and just ground yourself.
That would be the farm to buy. We should have been able to do that. Ooh, oh my God.
That would be awesome.
A little far though.
Oh my God.
It is. It's beautiful. It's like 2.5 hours south of Calgary. Yeah.
Big pyramid and the labyrinth, the lake, the path around the lake.
I think that's a good wrap.
Yeah.
Wrap. Do you want to sing a song there, Dan? You want to finish off with the song?
Yeah. Can I?
Yeah, or whatever you feel want to do. Yeah.
With smudging, even though it's kind of warm in here, but that's okay. So I'm
gonna put it that's okay. It's good to do it right at the end because then we'll get to burst out.
I may have to sit a little back from
the mic. Yeah, that's fine.
The mic here. Okay. See how this goes. This is actually an original song. This song was gifted to me on my way back from Manitoba in a 13-hour drive after being at Bannock Point, which is a sacred site right smack dab in the middle of Canada. It's called Manitou Abbey, which is which means where the creator sits. And it's in the White Shell. It's a petriform site. So there's rock paintings on the ground, pictures of snakes and turtles. And
is it
people.
Manitou Beach? Manitou? Nope. No.
No, Manitou Beach, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
No, this is Bannock Point.
Okay.
Yeah. Manitou Abbey means where the creator sits.
Oh, okay.
So I had asked for a creation song, and this is the creation song that came to me as I drove home. And it came to me just as it dropped in my head just as I sing it, so... This song is for my brothers. This song is for my sisters too. This song is for our fathers, for grandmothers and mothers too. This song is for the grandfathers, all those who walked before. This song is for the children, children of creation. We are children of creation. For all those who swim and fly, for Mother Earth and Father Sky. For all those who walk and crawl, for the trees and the waterfall. These are gifts of creation. We are gifts of creation. For the sun, stars, and the moon, fire, wind, rain, and the stone. These are gifts of creation. We are gifts of creation. For all those who sing and dance, for all those who teach and heal, for all those who build and play, For all those who fix a meal, these are gifts of creation. We are gifts of creation. So honor your brothers, honor your sisters too, honor our fathers, grandmothers and mothers too, honor all grandfathers, all those who walked before, honor the children, children of creation. We are children of creation. We're all children of creation. Mitakwiye oyasin, all my relations. Aho.
Nice. Thank you. Beautiful.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show, Joanne.
Yes.
Maybe when the fire bans over, I'll have to come down and try a sweat out. Awesome. We'll wait till it cools off. I hunt right down there, so I'm down there all the time.
Awesome. That would be great. Yeah, we need to pray for rain first. We need rain to quench the earth and satisfy the crops and the farmers and lift the fire ban.
Yeah.
It'll come soon, the rain.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.